Hey everyone, just a quick note before we get going. A portion of today's program involves a discussion about swear words. No actual swear words are spoken, but we dance around a few of them. And if that's not something you'd like to hear today, then please just check back with us next week. Okay, here we go. From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk about words we use when we'd really rather be using other words. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me as they do each week, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Hey, Kathy. Hey, Ross. We'll just jump into it. We have a listener question from one of our dedicated listeners who we hear from fairly often, Jim.
Jim from Diamond Head, Mississippi, who said, "This was an intriguing one. I actually really liked it. On a recent trip to see our children, I stopped to get gas and saw this term as I searched for the restroom." Oh, the term is guest room. I should have said that the subject heading was guest room.
Not the guest room.
I immediately assumed that I could check in for the night, have a nice comfortable bed, and a good strong air conditioner. Then I realized, no, that's not what they mean by guest rooms at all. Pretty misleading.
I like disleading. I like disleading.
Thank you. He said, "I know you said on a recent show that the saying, 'call a spade,' was fading from use, but it certainly applies here." So we started looking into euphemisms, like why guest room? Like why? What's the point of saying guest room instead of restroom? For that matter, why restroom instead of bathroom? Uh-huh. Or why bathroom?
Why bathroom instead of, you know what I mean? Instead of toilet?
Yeah, toilet. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, the basic thing is euphemisms are meant to soften, quote, the blow of a word or a phrase that might be seen as inappropriate in the situation.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, they help us be polite.
Right.
They help us sound good. You don't go to a funeral and have the guy go, "Here's the dead person."
Well,
maybe they're saying that behind the scenes, but you don't say that to the bereaved family. And in that sense, the same thing with restroom. People feel they don't want to say, "I'm going to the toilet," or they don't want to say, "I'm going to go urinate," or something like that. You say,
"Do you remember when Dad had that fetish?" No fetish, never mind.
I don't. What he was saying, he would say.
Oh, when he always said you should say urinate. He had that thing.
That was my whole life growing up. Yeah. We always said urinate instead of anything else for relieving ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. My father was that way. You
I don't remember that one.
Because I would say something like having to go pee-pee or something. He's like, no, Kathy. You have to urinate. It's like,
you're
okay.
Wow.
Yeah, it's the Latin effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, Dad was big on that. Dad was really big on that.
That's super weird guest room, though. So, like, I mean, we have toilet. That seems harsh, right? It seems like it's probably dirty. So we call it the restroom.
But why is restroom any worse than guest room, really? You're not going to rest in the bathroom.
But that's kind of where I was headed. It keeps shifting, right? We have toilet.
Yeah.
And so we call it, let's say, a bathroom. And okay, bathroom, that starts to mean toilet. And then so we come up, I'm making up this progression. I don't know what order these words happened in. But so then we have restroom instead of bathroom. And then after a while, restroom just starts to mean toilet. So now we're renaming restroom to guest room because we keep moving.
Because restroom now sounds bad. Yeah.
Everything keeps shifting over. Yeah.
That's a good point. I like that theory.
The sliding scale.
I'm going to add one little codicil to this whole thing, though. Here in Canada, or at least in Ontario, it's commonly called a washroom.
Right. I remember you saying
that. I mean, I think to some degree what you said is true, but there's also serendipity in this, too.
Yeah.
Something gets sort of stuck in as a, that's what we're going to call it. And, because washroom doesn't sound any different to me than bathroom, really. It's the same idea.
Actually, though, restroom came about in the 1800s, and it was a place to rest.
They would rest inside. Yeah, they would.
They might not even have a toilet in there. It was a restroom.
And then it became...
Yeah, then they got attached lavatories. And then a restroom became the room that had the toilet. And then the old-fashioned restroom where you just rested no longer was used. Restroom then became a toilet room.
Right.
What do you guys say if you go to somebody else's house?
I say bathroom.
I say bathroom. Can I use the bathroom?
Yeah.
Yeah. Although I say, actually here I say washroom too. I do. I'll say you both.
Yeah, I don't use washroom because I'm not Canadian, but I kind of like that for if I went to somebody else's house. That sounds polite.
Mm.
It's funny, as a marker, my son worked at Strand Bookstore in New York. And yeah, they had, for his first job there, it was like as a greeter. You know, he was a kid. You greet people coming in. And this guy comes in and goes, may I use the, where's the washroom? So Alex immediately goes, you're Canadian, aren't you? And the guy goes, how'd you know that?
Yeah, I have two small children, as I've mentioned. And there's an episode of the cartoon Bluey about, it's Australian, the show, Bluey. And so the whole episode is about how their mom doesn't want them to call the toilet the dunny. Have you heard this term? The dunny?
Yeah.
Because apparently it's a little bit inappropriate. I mean, not like it, you know, they're saying it on the, they're saying it over and over on this cartoon, so it can't be that bad. But she doesn't like it that they call it that. And so the whole episode is about them, her trying to break them of calling the toilet the dunny. And by the end, and by the end, she basically gives up.
Gives up. Yeah.
But it's funny because, so I guess maybe that's considered a little bit inappropriate or maybe just gauche. But here at our zoo in Wichita, which, by the way, is a world-class zoo. If you ever visit here, come to the zoo. Anyway, there's an Australian exhibit, and if you use the bathrooms there, there's a big sign above it that says dunny. Right?
Oh, really?
And so that's cute.
It's like, I mean, isn't that, that's kind of funny, but also if you were Australian, wouldn't you think that was a little inappropriate maybe? I don't know. I'm wondering.
I don't know.
Our Australian listeners, let us know.
Well, it fascinates me. I mean, I'm just looking at, I mean, bathrooms have just a list of words right here. It's John, Lou. Lou fascinates
me.
Because you hear Lou more often now, I think.
Paula used to. Do you remember Paula? Paula would always say Lou. She's British. Yeah.
Yeah. But I'm saying I think more Americans use Lou. It's part of Britishizing of a...
Yeah.
I love the fact that one theory that Lou came from, they think it came from either lavatory, which came from the French phrase, Lou de... So I can't even pronounce it. But then some people think it might have been from Waterloo.
Oh, funny.
Like it's a pun.
That sounds,
get it?
Cool.
From water closet?
On lavatory, it was funny. When we were kids, I'm not sure you had it, but Travel School, the old school, they always used lavatory. You'd have to go back to the lavatory.
Yeah,
and the downstairs bathroom was like huge. And it was like a very old building from like the early 1900s. And it was huge and sort of weird looking. And I always thought like that was specifically that word for lavatory, which I thought was related to laboratory.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought there was some sort of weird relationship between the two, which I would never hear it used except at Travel School. So I thought there was something, I didn't even know it was like a regular word. I thought it was like, that's the word you use at Travel School. Uh-huh. Typical kid, you know, like, oh, well. Oh, actually, one more thing, Fletcher. Do you know what dunny comes from?
No, I have no idea. I've only ever heard it on Bluey and at the zoo.
Okay, they think it comes from the 18th century British dialect word dunnikin, which means dung ken, dung house.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh.
So it's it's not
so it is a sort of unpleasant.
A little,
I just saw in this list, I mean, WC I see all the time here. I mean, all over Europe you see WC, which I always like, But facilities, I've always hated when people say,
facilities.
Can I ask where the facilities are? I don't know why that sets my teeth on edge, but it does. It's just silly to me, the facilities.
The one I don't like, that's not used at all now, is powder my nose.
You know what my dad says?
Movies.
I just remembered this. You know what my dad says? He needs to go practice his micturition.
I only know micturition because of Big Lebowski. So micturate from the rug.
We were doing for a while, I don't know why, I think it was some Latin thing, you know, ablution is washing up. So my wife and I would always go, we would just say, it's a joke, I started saying, I have to go ablute. And I got so used to saying it that she and I would both think to say it normally, oh, God, I got to go ablute now. And we were at this guy's house, and we were staying with him in some professor's house in Michigan, a friend of ours. And I said, oh, I got to go ablute. And he looked and kind of like smiled. And he said, he was a Latin professor, so ablution, I guess, was immediately in his mind. And it's an interesting use of the words.
I love it. If we should back up a little bit and just explain about euphemisms, that they say ancient Greek, you've got the EU, which means good or well or it sounds good. Premise is from the root of euphemism, of the phemism part.
It's like phene would be the word in Greek.
Okay.
To speak. It would be good speak. Yeah.
Okay. And I was just saying, you use them to be polite. You use it to conceal something, to like obfuscate. Like you don't want to say the poor. You say the disadvantaged. Mm-hmm. It's like it softens it. And it makes, like in political speeches and such, it doesn't sound quite as ugly. And you don't get the people pointing at you and saying you're doing bad things. And that's where you've got like all those things like, in the there used to be, remember those collections of the Department of Defense or Department of War, how instead of combat it would be violent processing. Collateral damage is a huge example of a euphemism. That's an unfortunate one.
Right.
Euphemisms can be very powerful in terms of hiding things. It's not only a bathroom and a loo and a this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think we should go through quickly though. I mean, the army ones really get me because they're common now and they're used in major newspapers, etc. Disengaging with the enemy, coordinated withdrawals, phase departure, tactical redeployment. All of us know that's basically a retreat.
Mm-hmm.
But it sounds so much better saying it that way. But also in common things like layoff, you know, he was fired, he was laid off. It's a big difference.
Mm. Oh, yeah.
Although there's a subtle meaning there that I think layoff to me, but I'm not sure it's true, has a slight meaning of like, you're not a bad worker. We had to like get rid of you because right. We don't have, you know.
What could we do?
Yeah.
What could we really do? It is, though, a little bit. I mean, like, if you're fired, then you did something bad and you have to leave. If you're laid off, then the company is getting rid of workers and you are part of that group that they're getting rid of, right? They don't usually lay off one guy unless it's a small business.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean it makes you feel any better, but yeah, it's one of those terms. But then we had downsizing, right?
Yep.
And then I think there's even another term now that it's just to distance the people who are doing the thing from the feeling of what they're doing, I think.
Yeah.
I think you're right. In a funny way, it's not only to like to hide things, it's also to make you feel better, the person. You're mm-hmm. right, actually.
Mm-hmm. Like, I feel bad about firing my fellow worker, but if the company is downsizing, that's it's just a natural thing that companies do.
Yeah.
Right.
And we have to lay you off, but thank you for your
service. Yeah.
Yeah.
One that got me, I ran across, was it's an insurance company euphemism. You don't want to say the patient died. You want to make it sound like, you know, you're divorcing yourself from it and it was just a bad outcome, and you say negative patient care outcome.
Wow.
So that way you distance yourself. It's like it wasn't the doctor's fault, it wasn't the hospital's fault, it was just a negative outcome.
Although, you know, on the death, where there are a lot of death euphemisms, we talked about them a week or two ago.
Yeah.
And, you know, we have passed away, passed on, we had that problem with pass. But one thing that's interesting to me about death euphemisms, I was thinking about this. When we lived in a different part of Toronto, there was this sort of kind of like homeless guy, alcoholic on the streets all the time. And there were a fair amount there was a shelter nearby. And most of the people were really nice. And this guy, Joe, was really a nasty guy. But he would come by every couple of weeks and ask for money. But we'd give him a couple of dollars or whatever. And like about a year, during one year, he came and said, oh, my mom died and I really need money. And this was when we were new to the area, and I believed him and I gave him $20 or whatever. Then 2 years later, he comes back and he goes, look, I need money. My mom just croaked. And I think he used that word as a normal meaning of dying. But for me, when he said croaked, I thought, like, how horrible. And the word got me.
That's interesting.
You know, I just sort of got me like how like a euphemism in a way, even for me hearing it, had it would have been better if he had said my mom passed away.
Yeah.
Even if I knew he was lying, I would have felt like, I remember this thinking, how can you do that about your mother? You know, that
right.
sort of thing.
Sounds so disrespectful. I like, yeah. I wonder where this comes from, but I like bought the farm.
Yeah.
Do you have any idea why someone would die when they buy a farm?
I wonder if that's got anything to do with mortgage. I'm not kidding.
Yeah, mortgage.
I'm going to look it up as we speak. I'm looking it up.
It does.
Popularized during World War II, it likely originated from military slang. Kathy's right, referring to a soldier's life, in effect, right? Life insurance payout, covering the family's mortgage.
Wow.
You bought the farm. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's amazing.
There are other things too, though. Other people are saying it's a plane crashing into farmland. I don't believe it.
Oh, I like that first one. They pay it off and they own the farm now because the soldier died. Oh my gosh.
There are a whole bunch of theories, though. They want to go buy a farm, but they can't because they're dead. I don't think that would work.
That doesn't really work.
I don't know.
I must say, death euphemisms. There's a whole list here. They're falling off its perch, obviously. Going into the fertilizer business. Horizontal phone booth. That's so ancient now because there's no such thing as a phone booth.
Yeah.
Kicked the oxygen habit.
Taking a dirt nap.
I've heard that.
Taking a dirt nap.
That one I know. Yeah. Taking the great cat nap is sort of cheerful.
Yeah.
It's like the big sleep.
But, you know, these are also, we should add one thing to this, too. There's an element of being polite. There's also an element of fear.
Oh, sure.
And I think fear is a big, I think the passed on has two elements. One is the being polite, but the other is like we don't like really thinking about dying. So we basically kind of like we used to have that with the devil. I mean, in the more religious eras, the devil was called things like, you know, old scratch or whatever. Mm-hmm. And those euphemisms were used. They're not really even euphemisms. They're basically like joke-isms or something to make him seem less powerful. And I think in some ways, these things, you know, or that got stamped return to sender makes it like, haha, you know, it's funny or something, too.
Well, it's like what we were talking about, the power of words the other week. And I think that euphemisms are clearly another example of that, because it's exactly what you said, Ross. In an opposite way, the words make it less powerful, the thing that we're talking about, like you said, the death or the devil or the whatever. Mm-hmm. I'm amazed that passed away and passed. Past has been used since the 1300s. I thought it was more recent.
Oh, wow.
And passed away 15th century.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it's weird. And now they've become like really popular again, you know?
Yeah, I don't like it. The word past, for some reason, it bothers me. I don't know why. But I found myself the other day with someone I knew, her father died, and I noticed myself saying, you know, gee, I'm so sorry that, you know, so-and-so passed on. I did say it. Which is weird, because I don't like it for some reason, but I say it now.
But we go back to your example with the croaked. It seems so harsh to say to somebody whomever just died, to go, I'm so sorry your dad died last week.
Yeah, and I certainly would never say your dad croaked. That would be definitely not. Like,
that's a good thing, Ross. Yeah. You got your etiquette there, baby. Yeah.
Although, actually, there's some word, I don't think anyone uses it, but we were talking about euphemisms. That would be a dysphemism. A bad...
Yeah, you're right. A bad euphemism.
Yeah, I know.
Do we know where croaked came from as a euphemism for death?
Oh, I don't know. A dysphemism like for death.
Isn't there like a death rattle that your throat makes when you... when you die?
Yes, you're right.
Yes, I bet that's it.
That's it. Yeah. They say it's mimicking the death rattle sound.
Yeah. Okay, so now we have clean cursing.
Oh.
That's another biggie. That's actually beginning to really fade, because now we basically say the curse word right out, usually.
We often do.
Although, the times have changed.
I know, although we don't, we were talking about it last week, we don't say it in print. We do F, star, star, etc. Mm-hmm. So we don't...
Yeah.
I didn't know some of these. Like bejabbers. It's obvious what it is, but I never really hear bejabbers at all anymore.
Oh, it's funny. Randy's mother always says bejeebers. She was
like,
oh, bejeebers, blah, blah, blah.
You're kidding.
Yeah. She was brought up, she was very in a rural place in California. She grew up. So it was like very bejeebers. She's always saying bejeebers, which I'm fascinated by, because I've never said bejeebers in my life, and I kind of want to, but yeah. I don't know how to do it casually and own it. I didn't realize that drat came from God rot it.
I didn't either. I did not know that.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't know. I don't use the word, and it's old-fashioned, but gadzooks.
Oh, yeah.
Do you know what that comes from? It's really interesting.
Is it God's hooks or something like that?
Yes. You got it.
Yeah.
the nail that pinned Jesus to the cross, yeah. which is really interesting.
Yeah.
And gee whiz, it's Jesus Christ. I didn't know that.
I didn't know. It is. Golly is God's body. Gosh is God. I figured gosh. Judas Priest.
Yeah,
jumping
sure.
Jehoshaphat. Odds Bodkins. Now, there's one we all use, yeah. and I bet we don't know where it came
like
from.
That one.
I didn't know. I mean, from the old cartoon, Suffering Succotash.
Oh, sure.
I didn't know that. Suffering
that was
Savior.
Daffy. Yeah.
Suffering Savior. I never knew that
Suffering
at all.
Succotash.
Succotash.
I can't do it.
Suffering Succotash. I can't do it either.
None of us can do it.
No.
Okay, Fletcher, it's your turn.
Going back to Bluey, my two-year-old, we're going to need to get some money from Bluey. My two-year-old is walking around saying, oh, biscuits all the time now.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, biscuits.
I never said biscuits, but I was like son of a biscuit instead of son of a, yeah.
Yeah.
Son of a biscuit. Son of a biscuit. Oh, gosh, this is not, I can't stop now.
I know. It's really interesting.
It is, though, because we're saying the same thing. Like, everybody knows
yeah.
what we're
that's
saying.
That's what we were saying. Yeah, that's yeah. what I don't get. I do understand what we were saying the other day when it's like, okay, you can't say these because, like, you're not supposed to, you know, you're
yeah.
bringing down the wrath of God. But nowadays,
yeah.
in conversation and stuff, you're right. It's like, if I'm saying bejeebers,
yeah.
I don't know. It's funny. Well, you still see it. I mean, we go back to what we talked about, like with the asterisks and then that and that. I am a profane person. I am a swearer. And I do notice that some people really don't like it. And mm-hmm. I always feel a little bad because I'm sitting there, you know, nattering on and you can see them sort of recoiling. And I can see them not liking me as much. I mm-hmm. truly can. Mm-hmm. I really feel like, you know, I'm not making my point anymore because they're focusing on that.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you do see that there's still a power in it. Doggone
well, we've got a
it.
Little list here. Doggone. Yes, we have dang and dung. Get going. Get going, girl. Darn.
I can't say dang I or darn. I can't. If I say it, it sounds wrong. You guys say it, and it's
I
natural.
Say dang. Yeah, I say
you
dang
both
all the time.
Do.
Yeah. Since I'm in radio, I think there are things that I've, I don't want to say
taught
picked
yourself.
Up, but started. Yeah, taught myself. There you go. That have helped me not to say some of those words because I pretty easily say a lot of those words. And so, you know, I can't say that kind of thing around a microphone. And so I'll say, like, goodness gracious, right? But I also
yeah.
find myself doing that when I'm just out in public. And
you've
I always
picked it up.
I always get funny looks from people. When I say something like goodness gracious, maybe it sounds so old timey or something. I don't know.
Yeah.
It does. Goodness gracious does.
Well, if you follow it up with great balls of fire, no one will notice.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you should say jumping Jehoshaphat. I like that one too.
Tarnation.
Okay. Here's a quickie, Fletcher.
Okay.
This was a message from Kenneth San Diego.
Okay, so no more. No, we're moving on from euphemisms.
No, we are definitely moving on from euphemisms.
Okay.
Okay, Ray, your show about prefixes, the B prefixes. I have a question. Do you remember the B prefixes that we were doing? I have a question about another B prefix word, beholden. I always thought it was a bastardized beholding, but I'm assuming now it's not. But what is it and why? Interesting.
I like the why.
I like bastardized. That would not have been used 100 years ago. You couldn't have said it. So
yeah. So we talked a few weeks ago about the B prefix and how we were talking a lot then about beheaded and how it was. I think
right.
you said privative. It took away what came after. So
mm-hmm.
the B head
right.
took away the head. Although I got an email, and I'm sorry, I don't remember your name. I got an email from someone who suggested that maybe it was not so much taking it away, it was turning you into a head. It was beheading you.
I like
isn't that.
That
clever? Yeah.
That's clever. Yeah.
I like that a lot.
That was from Thomas. I'm not sure. From Tom. Yeah. I'm not sure where Tom is from, but thank you for that one, Tom. So anyway, we were talking about that B prefix and how a lot of times it's not the the taking away, but it's rather endowing you with that or putting it upon you. So like belittle makes you little, right?
And behead makes you head.
And behead makes you a head. <That's great. laughs> So now we're talking about beholden.
I actually am with Kenneth because I used to think it was beholding too. It means obviously under obligation or you're obliged. Uh-huh. And it was originally the past participle of behold.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the word behold, it came from the Middle English, which was beholden, but spelled with an I. I was going to say, how do you pronounce that one? And it meant to hold, to keep, to preserve, to observe.
So, Kathy, what would be the be there in that sense?
I guess is be even a prefix here.
Be is definitely a prefix, because holden is it's the combination of be and then hold.
Okay.
It's definitely a prefix, okay. And it's the past participle of behold. So we do have a prefix. But my question, though, here, which is an interesting one, is what is the be in there?
Mm-hmm.
The be would be basically...
to make you?
I think it's, in this case, yeah, I mean, it's hard. We can't be definitely sure, but it seems to me it wouldn't be the privative in this sense because we're not taking it out. We're basically adding to, so it would be by in that sense, near. So I would say it's be, because be sometimes be, I would be, in Old English would be nearby, during, about. So it'd be like nearing the holding, nearing, you could see it, behold. Yeah, that's what it would be.
Hmm.
But I don't understand, if you're getting beholden, though, specifically means obligated or indebted.
But you're near it, and now you're doing the past participle, so now it's like held, it's hold, you're always seeing it. You're always having to see it in that sense. I think that's my feeling of that.
I see what you're saying, because, I mean, it evolved. I mean, what I'm saying, okay, it started as to hold or to keep. Behold then meant to see, and then it's then beholden was under obligation. So you go from hold to see to being indebted or obligated.
Because you're talking about past participle. Behold is to hold or to keep in. And if you go to the past participle, it's kept or held.
I don't get the owing part of it, though. Because when you're beholden, you owe to someone. I don't get this. I'm sorry. I'm not being deliberately obtuse. I'm genuinely confused about the...
To behold something, you're looking at it, right? Therefore, to be beholden is to be seen or observed. That I would think that possibly. Yeah, I see what you're saying, though.
See, I don't get the obligation aspect still.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm saying. I'm missing the obligation.
I'm reading right here. I just looked it up as you were speaking because I thought, why don't I see what other people say?
Good idea.
To behold something is to perceive or gaze it. Therefore, to be beholden is to be seen or observed. Wait, although they share the same English roots, and beholden originated as the past participle, was to be held or to retained. But the two words weaved in and wended their way through different paths into present-day English. Behold was to see... by the 12th century. Beholden was called into duty as indebted by the 14th century as evidenced by its appearance in the Middle English poem.
And Sir Gawain and the Green Knight.
And the Green Knight. But they don't say why.
That's what I'm saying. I would like to know the why.
Yeah, my point, I still sort of feel that it's seen and then and therefore it's seen in you and therefore it's held. And therefore, because it's held... it needs to be held, and therefore it needs to be, it's it therefore it becomes the obligation. But the one problem is, and I'm going to get an easy, fun way out of this, is English is capricious. We have no idea why it did. We were talking, why do Canadians say washroom? Why do other people say restroom? Just because they do. And why did beholden become that? Just because it did.
See, thanks, Kenneth, for writing.
I think we're going to end this on a confusing statement. We have no idea, basically.
I think we'd like to say we're beholden to you, Kenneth, for writing.
Actually, I'm not so sure we are beholden.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petras records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petras from his home in Toronto, Ontario in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music. Our digital team is Beth Golay and Carly Cooper. Carly Cooper is also our video editor. You can subscribe to our channel on YouTube. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast, wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org, or email them at kandrpetris@gmail.com. You can also record a voice memo of yourself asking your question. You might get your voice heard on air. Or you can download the KMUW app and press the Talk to Us button. You can find Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
Each morning, it's a new opportunity, a chance to start fresh. A First from NPR makes each morning an opportunity to learn and to understand. Choose to join the world every morning with Up First, a podcast that hands you everything going on across the globe and down the street, all in 15 minutes or less. Start your day informed and anew with Up First by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts.